Yeah. They're so cute, and the little tartans they would
wear. Yeah, they never pay you.
Well,
that's
his
so cute,
they just lick you.
Yes. Weird Al's birthday was October 23rd, so I thought I'd put him into this list because
well,
of Preston.
Since he stole our idea, I
and
think we should play it.
Particularly because he stole our idea.
But you fear you're right.
You suspect you're out of sync.
You think that you're out of your mind.
This weekend at the Memorial Armory, Bear Whiz Beer is proud to present
the Everything You Know Is Wrong Expo.
It's a new age festival of ignorance.
It's a hopeful feast of mindless fellowship.
This weekend
at the Memorial Armory.
The Everything You Know Is Wrong Expo.
Crop circles.
Strange holes in the ground.
Things that aren't even there. People watching you.
Voices only you can hear.
Hopes. Fears. Imaginings.
The Everything You Know Is Wrong Expo is a Whole Slapper Enterprises production.
Plus, Ginzu Pyramid Slicing Knife free.
So sharp, it cuts itself.
Our first show, I think there were maybe 13 people in the audience. It was just scattered people just kind of like hanging out going, oh, I guess that's Weird Al. And it took a while before we really caught on. When we first started touring, we were the opening act for Dr. Demento, who's the guy that discovered me.
Yeah.
I remember the next year is when Eat It hit. And right in the middle of that tour, it went from like me opening for Dr. Demento to Dr. Demento opening for me, because all of a sudden I was just like big MTV star with a top 40 hit, and the dynamic changed a little bit.
You better listen, better do what you're told. You haven't even touched your tuna casserole. Oh. You better chow down or it's gonna get cold. So eat it.
Didn't you open up for the New Wave act, Missing Persons, at one point?
Well, just one show. Exactly one show. And that was before my first tour. That was in 1982.
Do you feel me?
It was just a kind of a traumatic experience because I loved Missing Persons. I thought they were really a fun New Wave group. And I thought, oh, their audience would love to hear a whole set of accordion-based song parodies about food.
Right.
And that was not the case. We got pelted with literally anything that wasn't nailed down. Everything got thrown at us for 45 minutes. It was it wasn't really a positively affirming kind of event.
I didn't know about that, about the people pelting things at you. Like, what do you do after that? Did you go back to your van and go, what am I doing here? This is crazy. I should go back to school?
Kind of. You know, I decided at that point, maybe I shouldn't be an opening act for a while. Like, even if there's only 13 people in the audience, I want them there to see me. One of the things that I remember most about that particular night is as soon as the curtain went down, my whole band was on the floor, like, trying to pick up the spare change that had been thrown at us. Like, wow, I got, like, $2 worth of change here.
In Mexico, they have an old theatrical tradition.
Oh, yeah?
Called La Palombra.
Palombra?
La Palombra. No. And it came out of the days when the Mexicans were a little more primitive in their life expression, their culture, and they used to celebrate by throwing money at, in the theater in vaudeville. Good performers, they would throw gold and
that's
money.
That's an old tradition there.
Oh, yes, it is.
It's and a good old
they
tradition.
They didn't like the performers. They used to shoot at them. You know?
No. Mm.
Yeah.
No. Guns?
That seems
yeah,
fair good. Enough.
Now, this has, of course, been modified. Theater is still very popular in Mexico. I just got back from doing a tour myself.
You did?
Yeah.
Did you tour down
there?
Mexico?
Sure. Yeah.
Look, let's talk about, we'll talk about that in just a second, but I'd like to hear about this.
Thanks.
What about
I would also like to, I want to later get into the more religious aspects of the situation and the heart transplants and how they, you know, conform
sure.
to this kind of reality. But first, I'd like to say something about horses.
Why don't you?
But let me get back to what I was saying, if you don't mind. Just
you
a
didn't
second
pick up Mexico. Any bad habits in Mexico. Or...
Yeah, I picked up a few, but most of them are just with a little repair will be as good as new.
Really?
Oh, yes.
Well,
and
how...
I got
go
them
ahead.
In a
go
monastery ahead. Just on the other side of a nunnery, excuse me. It's now a monastery. It used to be a nunnery. Before that, it was a monastery and a nunnery, which is why it's no longer in existence. They had a little trouble there. Anyway,
the palombra. Yeah.
Yeah, so today in Mexico, if you don't like a performer, you throw little pieces of lead at him. See?
Just pieces of raw lead? That's
just little
really
pieces of lumps
just,
of lead.
Just
blom,
lead.
Blom, is it blom?
Blom.
And you throw, you put them in the, like, put them in a tomato.
Oh, well, that,
throw it like that. Fishing weight seems like that. Put them in an onion. Now, the palombra.
You must be able to get an incredible speed in a tomato with a lead.
Yeah,
right?
You can. And believe me, if a guy is singing and you don't like him, he knows it, you know. Oh, you know. And it's hard sometimes to tell the, you know, the. So anyway, the palombra is a, it's a, well, it's a, the largest compliment, I might say, that you could pay to a performer. It's a sledgehammer head in a pumpkin.
In a pumpkin.
In a pumpkin.
Inside.
It's usually launched from the balcony at the performer.
Is there, I know this might be a silly question because you didn't get that deeply into language, is there a name for the person who throws the palombra from the balcony?
Yeah.
I know that in some of these rituals, sometimes people just get names for things. I don't know.
El Lancero.
El Lancero. But does that translate at all?
Yeah.
It's palumbrist in English.
Palumbrist. Oh, a palumbrist.
El Lancero.
Call a palumbrist. No, that's...
The
that's
thrower is also
the thrower.
Is the thrower.
What do you call the thrower?
El Lancero.
That's El Lancero?
Right.
All right, he has any... does he stand in a special place? Just anywhere.
His name is Hermilio.
Hermilio?
Yeah, if you really want to know him personally, you know. He's the master. He can heft about a 20-pound sledge head in a, disguised in a pumpkin.
Why do they disguise it in a pumpkin?
Well, it's a tradition.
If it's a compliment, it's a compliment, right?
Well, it's an offhanded compliment. You know, if you are driven to this kind of reaction from a performer, you see, there's a certain compliment involved in that. Get off the stage! You know, we yell here in America. They're the more subtle. It's more like, and you throw.
It's a heavy compliment.
Like, right. And, you know, you either get him or you don't, but he catches on very quickly.
Right. Mr. Savat, let me ask you a question here. This may go over your head because you weren't there long.
What?
It must be difficult, particularly when people know a bad performance is going to go on that night.
It is hard.
It must be hard to watch and also to bring a 20-pound sledge and a pumpkin into the theater.
Oh, yes.
To the balcony. You know,
well, they sell them.
Is it a special?
No,
they sell them?
Of course.
They sell,
so,
they
yes.
sell
and
them.
Everybody knows that.
Good. You can make your own, as it were. Pick out a radish and a little piece of lead or, you know, a coin sometimes. This shows you how confused the tradition has become in the modern time.
Well,
coins, which used to be used exclusively for performances that you enjoyed, are now placed, five or six heavy coins, especially pennies from London. Pennies from London.
That's the English music culture.
Sharpen the edges of the money.
Yeah, I was just demonstrating. You didn't really have to throw one of those at me. Well, they are now used hidden in tomatoes and pears and things to try, you know, and get them.
Look out! Oh, that is a palumbra.
That is
a squash.
No, that's a winter melon, actually.
I have a recording.
That's a 15-pound.
Can I have a little bit of that, please? Could you have? Thank you.
And I said, hey, Kurt, it's Weird Al Yankovic, and I'd love to do a parody of Smells Like Teen Spirit. And his first line was, well, is it going to be about food? Because I was sort of known for doing the food parodies. I said, well, actually, no, it's going to be a song about how nobody can understand your lyrics.
Right.
And there was like this kind of pause at the end of the line. And then he said, yeah, okay, that's funny. And that was it. That was it.
You know, he kind of had a point, though, didn't he? Like, there's like My Bologna, I Love Rocky Road. My personal favorite is the Rye or the Kaiser. Eat It. Like, what's with all the food songs?
I don't know. I guess I was obsessed with food in the early 80s. I mean, I just came off being a starving artist, so maybe food was on my mind. I don't know.
I'm glad I got to drop Rye or the Kaiser. That is my favorite Weird Al song of all time.
Try the Rye or the Kaiser. They're on special tonight. If you want, you can have an appetizer. You might like our salami, and the liver's all right. And they
Kaiser.
Well, thanks. You know, and people say that I predicted the Rocky sequels because at some point, I guess Rocky winds up actually owning and working in a restaurant. So it was kind of prophetic in a way.
I feel like you should get a credit.
I should.
You know?
I should get royalties.
You should get points on that.
When you can't stand the pace in the big rodent race, come on in where it's safe, where the menu is trained. There's a smell in the air that reminds you of care. You've got something to get, and it looks like you're paying.
Aren't you hungry?
First we take some rat parts and fry them up real nice. Then we skin the kitties and barbecue the mice.
Guts in a cup, yum!
Mouse on a stick,
wow!
French fried fleas and beer battered tits.
Fried in a box.
We fry what you want.
And I, you know, my girlfriend's a vegetarian, and we sought out a vegetarian restaurant, and there you were with your wife and child.
Right, right.
Having vegetarian food. And again, then my entire weird, like, I have a problem when I do this show, when I interview, you know, people that I only know as media personalities. I just associate you with, I don't know what I thought, but, you know, when I saw you with no glasses in the vegetarian restaurant, I'm like, oh my God, Weird Al's like this earthy, kind of almost hippie nerd guy. I made a character judgment in that. How long have you been a vegetarian?
This is about 92.
And what was the impulse?
A friend of mine gave me a book, Diet for New America, the John Robbins book. And, you know, I was already a little predisposed to it because I'd kind of given up red meat and all that. But it made a really compelling argument from a health and a socio-political and an ethical reason. And it just kind of convinced me.
And you okay with it? I mean, you like being a vegetarian?
Yeah, you know, it gets me out of a lot of uncomfortable situations. Like if I'm in a foreign country, they say, try our fried rice. Rattlesnake, like, oh, I wish I could, but oh no, vegetarian, sorry.
Here's some vegetables.
Yeah.
Here you go. This is what we saute with the rattlesnake. I tried to be a vegetarian a couple times. Just too much beans involved, too much soy involved.
Yeah, I actually like. I don't miss it. I thought I'd really crave turkey at Thanksgiving, and I don't so much. I used to be more of a hardcore vegan, like no dairy products or eggs.
Were
or
you an
like
asshole
that.
About it?
No, that was the thing. I never, like, tried to impose my sense of, like, oh, you're going to eat that? Oh, good. You know? No, it was always a very personal thing. But I've kind of backed off on that. I'm still vegetarian, but I'll cheat on the cheese a lot. My wife used to be vegetarian. And then when she became pregnant, something in her body chemistry changed. We'd be walking down the street, and she'd see a billboard for, like, prime rib, and she'd start salivating, like, what?
Baby needs meat.
Right, baby needs meat.
So she's not vegetarian.
She's still vegetarian, except she eats meat all the time.
And how about the kid?
You know, my daughter's 8 years old, and we didn't want to impose any kind of dietary thing on her because, you know, we got, like, Matt Stone.
Yeah.
From what I'm told, you know, he was raised in a household where they had to eat healthy all the time, and it was, like, you know, literally and figuratively rammed down his throat. I mean, he had to always, like, eat really healthy food. So I've been told that now he rebels and he just, like, eats garbage food all the time.
And that's why we have South Park, because his parents made him eat.
You know I love that organic cooking. I always ask for more. And they call me Mr. Natural on down to the health food store. I only eat good sea salt. White sugar don't touch my lips. And my friends is always begging me to take them on macrobiotic trips. Yes, they are. All but night I take out my strong box that I keep under lock and key. And I take it off to my closet where nobody else can see. I open that door so slowly, take a peek up north and south. Then I pull out a Hostess Twinkie and I pop it in my mouth. Yeah, in the daytime I'm Mr. Natural, just as healthy as I can be. But at night I'm a junk food junkie. Good Lord, have pity on me.
But I didn't want my daughter to, like, rebel against the other. She knows that, you know, I'm vegetarian and we try to eat healthy, but we never really, We try to help her make her understand.
Does she like meat, though? Because some kids who were brought up by vegetarians, they develop a sort of distaste for it.
Well, she used to, a few years ago, I mean, my wife brought her to some, like, Korean restaurant, and my daughter was like, oh, do I get to eat the eyeballs out of the fish? And, like, do I eat to? She
really?
Like, going nuts with it. But now she's such an animal lover now. She's, like, the total zen nature girl animal lover, and she's kind of connected the fact that meat comes from animals, and now she's, she actually became a vegetarian just pretty much on her own.
Oh.
You know, guys, read in the paper that, you know, the Japanese are now sending food to Seattle for all the starving people up there.
That's true. And, not only that, they had terrible, excuse me, Mr. Seattle,
yes.
they had terrible snowstorms up there, too. They're just getting,
cocaine was falling all over
Coke
the
falls.
Town. And you
just
know, that gives
terrible.
You a terrible appetite. And when you're starving and high on cocaine, you know, a little Japanese food is highly appreciated, even.
Yeah, you can even learn to use chopsticks.
That's true. If you can get your chops together, as they say up in Japan.
In Kyoto, we say, hush your mouth, little Kyoko. People in Seattle starving to death. You eat your rice.
Idiot.
It's cold.
We serve them sweet sour transistor.
Very good.
Very good. Milking, very much.
Very much. In Seattle, you know, they much in to space station.
Ha.
And then no work. Ha. None work there in Seattle.
No work.
Space not happy with them. This is what my Zen guru say to me.
Yeah, Zen, what do we do, say the people of Seattle. You know, it's nice, good, sit with your legs crossed out in front of unemployment office, back straight, look down the middle of nose. But when you're hungry, Buddhism, no good.
Buddhism and unemployment agency, no
work.
We figure out how we able to fish as a fisherman and be Buddhist. At the same time, we no kill a fish. That against our religion. We just take them out of the water.
Not to hurt any living thing.
No.
Kill them first.
If a fish can't breathe, tough.
Yeah.
We can't breathe
on
the water.
Breathe.
Hey, sushi, we send all the tougher fish to Seattle. Keep a tender fish here in Toiko.
Don't want to argue, I don't want to debate. Don't want to hear about what kind of food you hate. You won't get no dessert till you clean off your plate, so eat it. Don't you tell me you're full, just eat it, eat it. Get yourself an egg and beat it. Have some more chicken, have some more pie. It doesn't matter if it's boiled or fried. Just eat it, just eat it, just eat it, just eat it.
And thank you for the Japa Dog. Is that what it's called? Japa Dog? I hope that's right and I'm not being racist or some weird thing. Had Japa Dog. It was good. It's a hot dog with some seaweed on it, some fried onions, some teriyaki sauce, and wasabi mayo. Man, I'm not a big hot dog guy, but Jesus, those were great.
Let's eat!
Let's eat!
And he said the word, and we ate it. Hot dog! And what was the word?
Hot dog!
Hot dog, yes, dear friends. A mighty hot dog is our Lord. I'm not talking about hate. No, I'm talking about eight. Dinner at eight. Let's eat!
More sugar!
Ah, the glories of food.
It's really pretty ironic because nobody wanted to sign me to a record deal back in the early 80s because I do what is ostensibly novelty music, which the implication there is one hit wonder, just ephemeral. Like, you know, most people that have funny song hits on the radio, you never hear from them again. They're a footnote in rock music history. So people thought, oh, this is really funny. This is really brilliant stuff. But yeah, we're interested in artists. They're going to have longevity, that we're going to be here for a while. So So it's really, really quite odd that I've managed to hang out as long as I have.
This is John Knightley speaking to you direct from the Demo-Publican National Convention, where Craig Fleming's keynote address is already in progress.
I said, hush, Foghead. And furthermore, let's look at the farm problem. We store millions, millions of pounds of surplus food, but
the Mexican army is eating salami and onions from Peru.
We now pause for station identification.
ABCWRD.
In conclusion, I say, put us in office, and once more the Liberty Bell will ring.
This is Walter Buckskite on the convention floor with Averill and Herringbone. Sir, will your past record affect your chances this year?
Please not forget my past. The future looks bright ahead.
And now we switch you to the main caucus room.
What the heck is all that noise about?
Man, you're talking about a party.
Now, up to the rostrum where Chairman Sam Sunburn is calling the roll.
Nebraska nominates Joe E. Smith.
Ah, thank you, friends.
No, 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 no.
Any other nominations?
Mr. Chairman, the delegation from California, home of Death Valley, America's playground. Nominates the people's choice.
We interrupt most honorable broadcast for special news bulletin.
What'd I say?
This is John Knightley again. The nomination has been conceded to
MIGKEYMOUSE.
You know, I just think, though, you didn't have to ask Kurt Cobain for permission. Parody's protected by law. You don't need the artist to sign off on anything. Like, why is it important that they sign off on what you do?
I mean, I could get away with it. The courts tend to take advantage of them. And also, I mean, from a practical standpoint, anybody can sue anybody for any reason at any time, whether they have legal reason to do so or not. So I just don't want to be in a position where I'm going to be worried that somebody's going to come after me.
Right.
I'd rather people be in on the joke and feel like, you know, it's a poke in the ribs, not a, you know, kick in the butt, is what I like to say.
In 1976, George Harrison was convicted of subconscious plagiarism. Here's Harrison's My Sweet Lord.
My sweet Lord. My Lord.
And here's He's So Fine by the Chiffons.
He's so fine.
Du-lang, du-lang.
Wish he were mine.
Du-lang, du-lang.
Obviously, they're not identical. They feature different tonalities, tempos, structures, instrumentation, and musical character. But they are very similar. Even though they're in different keys, the chords and melodies are nearly the same. And if we take a few liberties with tempo and tonality, we can play them simultaneously to illustrate the resemblance.
He's so fine. She was mine.
I'm back in the saddle again, out where a friend is a friend, where the longhorn cattle feed on the lowly gypsum wheat. Back in the saddle again, riding the range once more, toting my old 44, where you sleep out every night and the only law is right, back in the saddle again. Whoopee-tie-i-o, rocking to and fro, back in the saddle again. Whoopee-tie-i-yay, I go my way, back in the saddle again.
Back from the shadows again. Out where an engine's your friend, where the vegetables are green and you can pee into the stream.
Right on, right
on. Yes, we're back from the shadows again. Howdy, everybody. I'm the Whispering Squad.
And I'm the Lonesome Bee Tick.
And I'm Artie Choke. And we're just a joke.
And don't be afraid, little people, because we're just Holy Graham.
Great.
Yeah, but what about you, partner? What you doing today?
Can't be much, Lonesome. Nobody's working.
Nobody except us, and I'm getting tired of standing here with these geeks a-gawking at me.
Now you keep it sweet, Pete.
Listen here, Leafhead, I'm gonna pluck
now,
your
now, boys. Fighting's out of style.
Yeah.
And fun's where the fair's at. In the future, that is.
You can bet your roots, Toots, it's tons of fun.
And technical stimulation.
That's what I need.
And there's lots more of me where I come from.
In government-inflicted simulation.
The future can't wait. No place to hide.
Yeah, so climb on aboard.
We're going inside.
We're going back to the shadows again. Out where an Indian's your friend.
Going down, going down.
Where the vegetables are green and you can pee right into the stream, and that's important. We're back from the shadow again.
Saw me standing alone, would I dream in my heart, would I love my own? Blue moon, you knew just what I was there for, you heard me saying a prayer for someone I really could care for.
Don't get fresh with me, Tuna. Where were you on the night of the murder? Stick him back in the can.
I was requested to go and take my guitar, which was really terrible. I had to stand up in court with my guitar. It's all these people grilling me and talk about how you write a song, which is really difficult because every song is slightly different anyway. But it did cause a bit of a problem because, especially like in America, the disc jockeys are all on top of it now, pulling every song apart. It's like spot the tune, you know, because so many songs are like so many other songs.
I dreamed I saw Joe Hill last night.
Scarborough Fair. Parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme. Remember me to one who lives there. She once was a true love of mine.
If you're traveling in the North Country Fair, where the winds hit heavy on the borderline, remember me to one who lives there. For she once was a true love of mine.
Where bombs keep dropping from our planes, and the desert heat is really neat, but will soon cool off in winter rains. Hey!
Oklahoma, where the wind comes sweeping down the plain, and the waving wheat can sure smell sweet when the wind comes right behind the rain.
We ended up with musicologists in court, where we had about 25 songs, all with the same structure and the same notes. What happened, they blew up the what they call motif A, which was da-da-da. They had that blown up about 6 feet square in court, and they were kept talking about these three notes, and the musicologist came on and played like about 15 or 20 songs, all with the same notes. But the judge also was funny, talking to my attorney just last week. He said, well, actually, I like both of the songs. My attorney said, what are you talking about? You said it was the same song. And the judge said, what I really mean is I like the same song with the two sets of lyrics. So it's something that I had to treat it, you know, positively or negatively. So I decided to do it this way.
You got to accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, latch on to the affirmative, don't mess with Mr. In Between. You got to spread joy up to the maximum, bring gloom down to the minimum, have faith or pandemonium liable to walk upon the scene to illustrate my last remark. Jonah in the whale and Noah in the ark. What did they do just when everything seemed so dark? Man, they say we gotta accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, latch on to the affirmative, don't mess with Mr. In Between. Remark, Jonah in the whale and Noah in the ark. What did they do just when everything seemed so dark? Man, they said we better accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, latch on to the affirmative, don't mess with Mr. In Between. With Mr. In Between.